Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for August 14th, 2022. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. Happy to be with you once again, talking the big shows in pro wrestling. And we want you to be a part of the broadcast as well. So the way you can do that is you can email us, WNIALivecast@gmail.com, or you can call us up, 515-605-9345. If you want to chat with me and my co-host tonight, you can press 1. If you'd like to just call in and listen, you're welcome to do that as well. You can follow me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. Always love a follow and love to interact with people about wrestling. Tonight we're going to talk about NXT Heatwave. We haven't talked about NXT in depth in some time. The Heatwave show is coming up on Tuesday. It's a special event for NXT, as they have been doing on these Tuesday nights. And so it's going to be interesting to break down that card. We'll also talk a little bit about AEW, CM Punk's return this past week. Speaking of returns, Hit Row returning to WWE. We'll take a look at that as far as what wrestlers Triple H is bringing back, and of course the G1. I always like to brag here when I'm caught up on the G1, and I've been able to say that every Sunday since the New Japan tournament has started. So, yes, I am caught up, and so that's a nice feeling. Again, 515-605-9345, and we'll talk to you then. And so I know that scheduled to have Dr. Bruce Hazelwood join me here on Wrestling Night in America. He's having some phone issues right now. Hope that he can get that cleared up. And for those who follow me on Twitter, it's supposed to be Nate Lindberg joining me tonight to talk NXT. And he had something pop up last minute that he could not be co-host tonight for. So hope that Bruce will join us a little later. But, you know, starting with the G1, let's start there because I really wanted to talk with Bruce about Heatwave. So we'll flip things on their head here. You've got to be nimble on your feet, things like this. So we'll do just that. The G1, as it stands right now, when you look at the A block, it is Okada out in the lead with 8 points. There are four others tied with 6 points. That mirrors the C block, actually, where Zack Sabre Jr. is the leader of that block with 8 points, and there are four others tied with 6. In the B block, Jay White leads all competitors in the tournament with 10 points. Tama Tonga is second with 8, and Sonata third with 6. And then in the D block, there is a 5-way tie in first place, 6 points. So we are at the point where night 18, believe it or not, on August 16th, is going to be the final, what you would say, the regular season action for the G1 is. And that is a full night of block matches, 2 matches per block. It's Okada versus Lance Archer in the A block, as well as Jonah versus Bad Luck Fale. So Okada could extend his lead there and get that 10th point and really put things out of reach with a win against Archer. In the B block, it's Ishii versus Sonata and Tama Tonga versus Jay White. So you've got Jay White with 10 points against Tama Tonga with 8 points. That will decide the winner of the B block. In the C block, it is Goto versus Evil and Naito versus Zack Sabre Jr. So, again, that's going to decide the C block as well. And the D block, Takagi versus ELP and Will Ospreay versus Juice Robinson. The semifinals will be held on August 17th, and then the finals on the 18th. So 3 nights, back to back to back, and that's what we've got coming up with the G1. So we'll probably be talking a lot about the G1 next week here on Wrestling Night in America. Then the following week we'll do a preview of AEW All Out, which is coming up at the beginning of September, and then after that we will have the All Out post show right here on Wrestling Night in America. So we do have Bruce on with us, so let's go to him now. Bruce, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Thanks for having me, Greg. Sorry for being a little late, but I'm here and looking forward to talking about Tuesday's show with you.
Yeah, I thought it might be cursed tonight. I know, you know, I had talked to Nate about joining us, and he had a situation pop up, and he had to back out at the last minute, and then I saw your DMs, and you were struggling too, and I'm like, maybe this just wasn't meant to be tonight. Maybe I should have just gone solo, because it might not work. But I'm glad to have you here anyway. And, yeah, I'm excited to talk with you about NXT, because, like I said at the beginning of the show, we haven't talked a lot about NXT here on Wrestling Night in America. There's been a lot of other stuff going on with WWE and AEW and New Japan with the G1. And NXT, given its current iteration, sort of gets lost in the shuffle. You know, the takeovers are not there. They were once a very important part of the NXT ecosystem. They still do have those special events, but they're not the takeover brand, and they just don't feel as special. They're not out in those huge arenas that, you know, WWE main roster shows do. So, you know, there is that tendency to have NXT get lost in the shuffle a little bit now. But I want to talk big picture with you first. We talked about this a little bit last week on the show, but as someone who covers NXT for PWTorch.com, Bruce, I want to ask you your thoughts on Triple H taking over the creative reins, not only creatively, but we've seen that, you know, he is not afraid to bring folks back who were caught under Vince McMahon's watch and who were pushed in his version of NXT. And so I kind of wanted to get your thoughts over the long term of what you think NXT is going to be. Do you think there will be significant changes to NXT, knowing that this is not the NXT that Triple H invested so much blood, sweat, and tears into? This is almost the exact opposite of what he built. And so as the person in charge not only of creative but in charge of the hiring and firing of not only main roster but developmental, do you see him keeping this theme of NXT 2.0, or do you see it, you know, maybe not tomorrow, maybe not next month, but, you know, if we're talking a year from now, is it going to look a lot different?
So, there's a lot to that question, to those questions, and I'm going to try and go one by one here. I'll start with first, while Triple H's Black and Gold NXT was definitely different than what we see right now, we have to remember that NXT at its inception was developmental, and it's regressed and reverted back to becoming developmental. So in my eyes, that's good. And I think Triple H was able to kind of do his own thing with NXT for a while because there wasn't as much cohesion between NXT and Raw and SmackDown. And now with him being at the top of creative for Raw and SmackDown, I think he understands the need to have NXT remain as developmental so that they have people to occupy the spots that are going to be vacated by some of the stars now, whether it's due to retirement, due to their star fading, due to going on to other things like acting or whatnot. So I think we're not going to see too much different from what we have now in terms of what NXT is. What I do think you might see change is the presentation and the look of it might go a little differently from what it was. I was never the biggest fan of the presentation in terms of the dark aesthetic and really just kind of like the metal aesthetic of Black and Gold, although I liked the wrestling. And this definitely has NXT 2.0 has more of a look and feel that should, if they could, market well, that should appeal more to a broader audience. And, you know, so in that regard, I think that while Triple H had it looked much differently during his tenure, with him being at the top now, I think it's going to remain as is. And from my perspective, from covering the show, with Kelly Wells and Nate Lundberg, is that even before Vince McMahon was ousted, NXT kind of has found its groove and its rhythm, and it hasn't really deviated much from that, but it's been a lot more tight and focused than it had been. Really, that first 6 months of the shift to 2.0 was really tough on the presentation. And the last month or so, I'd say the last month or two, they've really found a nice rhythm and pattern to how they're presenting their shows, from the opening segment to the closing segment, in terms of match, promo, match, backstage interview, vignette, just that, what they're doing there is a good balance. So the show right now is going well. And because of that, I don't think that part of the presentation might change, although a bit of the sort of aesthetic part of the presentation will change. Did I get all your questions?
I think so. I mean, that was a good response. I think you hit on most of the questions that I had in there, if not all. But, yeah, you know, I'm just curious because this I think we're still trying to process Triple H being in charge of not only creative, but he's the head of talent relations again in a spot mm-hmm. that once he was removed from that in NXT and once he had the heart issues, we never really thought it was realistic that he would be in a two high-stress positions like this ever again. And so I think it's worth, you know, talking about if we're talking about NXT and, you know, Triple H is now in charge and his vision at one time for what, like you said, the aesthetics of NXT was very different. And even, you know, yes, it was developmental, but they looked for different players. I mean, the roster of NXT 2.0 is very different in many ways than the roster of Triple H's NXT. You know, in terms of what talent they're looking for, who they're looking to hire, what backgrounds they want these men and women to have. So that's, you know, something to keep in mind, too, in terms of NXT looking different a year from now, just roster-wise. You know, what kind of talent are they acquiring? Is it independent talent? Is it strictly, you know, continuing to build from the ground up with, you know, the folks from the NIL hires and things like that? So, yeah, I mean, it's just it's a – you know, a nice thought exercise, I think, to kind of get us started and get us into the NXT groove here as we talk about Heatwave on Tuesday. So I want to start with Santos Escobar and Tony D'Angelo in a street fight. The stipulation is this: if Tony D'Angelo wins, Santos Escobar is banned from NXT. And if Escobar wins, he's free from the Tony D'Angelo family. Nothing said about the others that Santos Escobar had with him, but at least Santos himself is. So, you know, there has been some buzz, I think, about Santos Escobar on the main roster or getting that opportunity here sooner rather than later. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Tony D'Angelo win here and Santos go to the main roster. Do you get that same feeling, too, on this one?
So we've been talking about us three at PWG Tux NXT. We've been talking about Santos Escobar going to the quote-unquote main roster for what seems like at least a year now. If not longer. And we have a running joke that we've been saying about Cameron Grimes and others for a long time now. Solo Sikoa being the most recent. But I also said on our show Tuesday that this is a match where I see either outcome as being a way to move either Santos Escobar or Legado del Fantasma as a unit to Raw or SmackDown. And that's because of stipulation. I feel like regardless of what happens, sure, you could have them lose and they get banned from NXT. Well, obviously that means they're going to go, you know, Raw or SmackDown. Even if they win, the stipulation is they're free. Well, if they're free, that also means they could be free from NXT and they could do what they want. So it wouldn't surprise me if them being free also means that they go as a unit to Raw or SmackDown. Now, I think it's more likely that if they lose, that the unit goes as a whole. But I still see either way as being, or either outcome of the match being a good sort of what's the word I'm looking for here? Not a trap, but it's a good thing to have these two options available to you that both make sense to me. And so I think storyline wise, if you're gonna move Santos, then I think the thing you need to do is put over D'Angelo. But it also depends on if they think Santos and especially Legado have done enough or have done, I guess, all they can in NXT. In my eyes, I think Santos has – the only thing he hasn't done is win the title, but the men's championship, but he doesn't need to win that. We all know how good he is and how good he has been. So there's nothing there. Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro, the former Raul Mendoza, they're perfectly fine as a tag team. Electra Lopez definitely needs more work, but I said that if she moves to Raw SmackDown, she could either work as the manager or – they brought back squash matches now, so she could go in that Nia Jax, Braun Strowman mold and just do a lot of squash matches for 3 months or so before she has her first big-time match on pay-per-view. So, again, I think go either way. If I was booking NXT, I'd probably put D'Angelo over just to – he seems more likely to stick around longer on NXT than Escobar, and so I think he needs to be the one that goes over here and really put over himself and Chandler Lorenzo stacks as the – I guess the top heel group within NXT outside of Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams, and they're more of a duo. D'Angelo's they're – name makes it seem like they can keep adding people, whereas Hayes and Logan seem like they're strictly going to be a duo. So yeah, I think you have to put D'Angelo over here. And again, you can go either way with what you do with Escobar and Legado del Fantasma.
I think it's also worth noting too that the expectation is that Triple H is going to have more interest in pushing tag teams on Raw and SmackDown than Vince McMahon ever did. You mentioned the squash match is returning. We saw that with the Viking Raiders a few weeks ago on SmackDown. We saw that this past week with Hit Row returning as a tag team. We've seen, a couple other instances. Yes, we've seen a couple other instances, you know, Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo on SmackDown getting involved with the Maximum Male Models in a backstage segment. So there does seem to be an effort over the last few weeks of presenting, if not, you know, maybe more quality than quantity, but also, you know, showing that the tag team division is something that may be taken more seriously. And if that's the case, yeah, bring Santos Escobar up, but also bring up, you know, Cruz del Toro and Joaquin Wilde, because they'll have a place there. Whereas if this had been 2 months ago, I don't know if that would be the case. What do you think of the Escobar D'Angelo feud to this point? I mean, this looks like where it's going to end one way or the other, but this has been one of the more long-form feuds in NXT 2.0. What's been your take on how it's played out?
I think it has gone on a little too long, but I also think that considering they had the issue with Troy Donovan, I forgot what his name is now in AEW, but the former Two Dimes being released so subtly in the middle of their storyline, I think they pivoted well enough to this mutiny within the ranks where there's more members of Legado del Fantasma anyway to really stick it to Tony D'Angelo. It's gone on a little long, but I have liked the meeting segments they've made between Escobar and D'Angelo. While some of the acting has been overdone, mostly on the part of the side characters within the feud, too often we're like, we want wrestling and promotions to do something different. And then when they do something different, we're like, oh, it was so bad. I think what they've done here, bringing back these vignettes where they're meeting and talking and trying to get under each other's skin and really just channeling those sort of mafia movies from the past and those intense scenes where it's just dialogue, but so much is being said within the dialogue and outside of the dialogue as well, that it kept me interested in what's happening. So for that, I'll say, I'd say it's about a B, B minus maybe. If it wasn't as long as it has been, I would say it would be a little higher, but going a little Zach Cador in here, I'll say it's about a B minus in terms of how it gets viewed.
I think that's pretty fair. Moving on to our next match, one of three title matches that we have scheduled for this show. It is Carmelo Hayes versus Giovanni Vinci for the North American title. We've seen a number of talents repackaged, given new names, given new gimmicks under the NXT 2.0 banner. We'll talk about one. One is in the main event for the NXT title here. And I'd say the results have been mixed at best. But to me, Giovanni Vinci is one of the better gimmick upgrades or changes that were made. You know, Fabian Aichner was, I don't think, not as well distinguished of a character. Obviously, he was very good in the ring. He continues to be very good in the ring as Giovanni Vinci, but I just think the character is better now in NXT 2.0 than it was, at least more fleshed out maybe, than it was in the original NXT.
Yeah, so Eichner is someone who, during the first Cruiserweight Classic, I was like, wow, he really stands out. Yeah, sure, he's another bald white dude, but he's much different than just another bald white dude in terms of his in-ring acumen and his abilities and his skills. And he maintained that NXT, but as you said, there never really was much of a character, even within Imperium, to him. And I thought that the moving of the now Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser to SmackDown without him was going to be, I thought we were going to see his future endeavors pretty soon. But this repackage has gone really well. And the thing that really made it stand out first is those introductory vignettes that they had, where you never saw who it was. There was a woman speaking in Italian over top and with subtitles underneath. And it really gave you an idea of who this person sees themselves to be and how they present themselves to the world. And that was more character building for the now Giovanni Vinci than Fabian Eichner ever had, even as part of Imperium. They were basically just, we hold the ring as sacred and the mat as sacred, and we're going to teach people that they need to be respectful in the ring by beating the hell out of them. Cool. But now there's a distinct character, someone who sees himself as this playboy, this attractive guy, this talented man, this rich dude, but who's very easily, as he has shown, let's get under his skin. And that sort of drives his vicious streak. He still has one of the best power bombs in the business. He just puts an extra bit of whip onto it that just snaps it and makes it look even more vicious. His presentation has done really well. And the thing that I think people haven't really discussed, but is really one of the more underrated aspects, they're letting him talk, and he's faring just fine on the mic thus far. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been the best. Then again, he did have a promo battle with Apollo Crews, so it's kind of hard to go back and forth with Apollo Crews and see who's the best promo there. But he's fared, I'd say, for someone who people thought didn't have any promo skills, he looks more than capable of handling himself for the spot that he's at right now. So that's a good thing in his, I guess, towards his progression. We hope that he can keep continuing to develop, because in-ring, he has everything that you need to have to be the NXT men's champion, definitely North American champion level right now. And I think the promo skills, if that just keeps going, he might be NXT champion or NXT men's champion here within a year, maybe a year and a half.
I think the best way I can sum it up is, as Fabian Eichner, I thought, wow, this guy's a really good tag team wrestler. I mean, this could be, he could be one half of tag team champions. But as Giovanni Vinci, I'm in the same boat as you. I'm like, if he keeps showing out the way he has, I mean, he's got a higher ceiling than I even thought. And it starts with the NXT North American Championship on Tuesday. Where do you see Carmelo Hayes? In some ways, I feel like as a character, he's kind of plateaued. I don't know if he's someone who really needs another strong – I mean, because he just comes across as such a strong personality, and I feel like if he doesn't have another strong personality to play off of, it's kind of hard for him. And, you know, his in-ring is really good, obviously. He's still – you know, you see he's a little green every once in a while, but one of the more talented raw talents in NXT, I think. Do you get a sense that he's – cooled off a little from a pretty hot start that he had in NXT?
So I might be the wrong person to ask, because when I was on the Dynamite post show with Wade, I said that the best part of NXT is Carmelo Hayes. And another way I'll put this is, over the past few months, Bron Breakker has been absent from a few shows, and he's the NXT men's champion, you know, arguably the top title on the show. It didn't really hit me that he wasn't on the show until well after, even a few days later, that the men's champion wasn't on the show. The one show that Carmelo Hayes missed, I made an immediate note in my report that he had missed the show, because to me, he is that integral to NXT 2.0. He is kind of the, you know, they used to call Mustafa Ali and Cedric Alexander the heart and soul of 205 Live. Carmelo Hayes is pretty much all that in NXT 2.0 to me right now. He is what is making the show kind of have its structure, because Bron Breakker will have his singular feuds. He had it with Joe Gacy. Now he has it with JD McDonagh. But Carmelo Hayes, and part of this is by virtue of being him being paired with Trick Williams, he's had feuds simultaneously with Cameron Grimes, Nathan Fraser, Giovanni Vinci, Wes Lee, all at the same time, just showing how much or how important he is to the men's singles division. To me, he is far more important than the person holding the men's title. The reason he calls himself a champion, in my opinion, is just, you know, part of it is character, yes, but he really is the champion to me that is indicative of what we want to see in NXT 2.0. When he came in, like you said, hot but very, very raw. He's really refined both his character presentation, his in-ring work has become, he was already pretty good in the ring, but so much more smooth now. You can definitely tell that he doesn't think as much with a move to move as he did when he first got to NXT. And the promos, again, we talked about Vinci. He is someone who has grown extremely comfortable on the mic, whether it's live in the ring, in a backstage interview session with Mackenzie Mitchell, who I should say Mackenzie Mitchell is probably the best overall character in NXT. She is just amazing at what she does. But then also in those barbershop segments, he just seems comfortable with who he is as a person, both in and out of the ring, and as the character of Carmelo Hayes. And to me, I don't think he's cooled off. I think, if anything, he's showed how much more important he's become to what NXT is now and what will continue to be moving forward.
Yeah, so buying high on Carmelo Hayes. Interesting.
I've said multiple times that if I'm starting a promotion and my choice is between Bron Breakker or Carmelo Hayes, there's no hesitation. I'm taking Carmelo Hayes.
Wow. All right, yeah, no, I can definitely see that. Like, you can see the potential that he has. You can see and I think the fans and getting them interested in him, that's not always easy. And I think he has that, even in his matches. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got that fan interest in his matches, and that's a huge step for him. We have Roxanne Perez versus Cora Jade. And this one is tough for me because I had seen the breadcrumbs that they had laid out. I recognize that this is not a move that NXT Creative made in haste, that they had built to this. But I didn't think it was the right time to turn Cora Jade. I thought, you know, you've got some pretty strong heels. You've got obviously Mandy Rose and the rest of Toxic Attraction as top heels. You've got some other potential top heels. I didn't think the babyface side was as strong, especially with Indy Hartwell getting, pushed aside a little bit and not getting the attention that she had gotten at times in the previous version of NXT. You know, they have some others who are kind of working their way up. But I thought having two really strong babyface female characters was a good thing. And it seems like it was almost like it was mimicking WWE's main roster. And the reason that WWE's main roster has such a babyface problem is it seems like they can never book a top babyface more than one at a time. You know, right now it's Drew McIntyre. Who's the second babyface? Who knows? They just don't have, like, the attention span is not, at least it was not under Vince, like, to build multiple babyfaces at a time. It was, this is the babyface we're building right now, this will be the next babyface, and there's nobody underneath that. So I guess my frustration is I kind of equated it to what they were doing on the main roster, which I thought was not smart in that, okay, we've got Roxanne Perez as a babyface, we don't need Cora Jade as a babyface, turn her heel. And I just didn't like that sort of thinking or that sort of booking. So I'll say Cora's done an admirable job. I think she just seems better tuned to be a babyface to me than a heel, so it's been a struggle for me to get behind her as a heel. But I think this is a match, this seems like a pretty big match. I mean, this, you know, the feud between these two former best friends, they've done some really nice video packages on NXT with this, and this does feel like a big match.
It definitely the match that will determine who the next number one contender is to the NXT Women's Championship. And I think it's also a match that will signal who is going to win the title match later in the night between Mandy Rose and Zoe Stark. We can discuss that a little later. So I'm high on Roxanne Perez. I was high on her as Roxy in Ring of Honor, and she was trained by Booker T. I'm decidedly less so on Cora Jade, and I have been decidedly less so on Cora Jade almost since the beginning. And I think part of it for me is it just seems like she's not as believable to me, and it comes off as too forced. Her turning heel definitely telegraphed, we saw it coming, we knew it was happening, The other thing that made it more questionable was the timing, because they had just won the Women's Tag Team Championship. And I understand, you know, Cora Jade wants to be the NXT Women's Champion. Cool. But you agreed to be in the tag team title match with your best friend, quote unquote, and won those titles. You should have used that as a way, you know, I bring up the old Jim Ross thing, right? It's about getting the winner's purse, and the champion gets the biggest winner purse, right? So if you're about really about winning and being champion, you, I think, made yourself have worth of a shot to get the women's title by letting go of your championships and then becoming involved in this feud. Of course, you know, someone turns heel, what's the first thing you do? You dress them in all black. You have all their makeup in black, and you give her a black kendo stick even to really put over the fact that she's heel now. Her first promo as a heel, we said that there were some missteps, but it was a big step in the right direction. And then it just kind of plateaued from there since. And I think also her in-ring work isn't – I don't think it's at a level that it needs to be for someone in her position. And I think it becomes more exposed when she's in there with people like Roxanne Perez, who, even though she's young, it is pretty talented in the ring already, although I have issues with her finisher. The thing about this match, too, is when they vacated those titles, they never made it clear initially that when Cora Jade turned on Perez, they never indicated explicitly that the titles had been vacated. And then when they made the announcement of the tag team tournament, it almost sounded like Roxanne Perez was going to enter by herself. And then they showed that that wasn't going to happen. So there was a lot of convoluted mess to this angle, this feud, which spilled over into the tag team, the women's tag team championship picture. I think they got where they wanted to there, but it came about in a very abrupt and, I think, a way that made it less significant for Katana Chance and Kayden Carter. But this, you know, this feud, I think, for me, I'm going to watch this match closely, mostly because of Cora Jade. I'll be covering the show live on Tuesday, so you'll find my report on pwtorch.com and on the VIP side as well. And this, to me, is one of those moments where you're either going – it's like Asuka versus Nikki Cross. You know, I think people at the time when she had her match – and sure, it was a Last Woman Standing match, but – I think people weren't necessarily as sold on Nikki Cross then, but then she has that match with Asuka, and people really bought into Nikki Cross as a singles wrestler in NXT at that point. This is one of those matches for me with Cora Jade. I need to see that there has been some more improvement than what there has been within the last couple months. And, you know, she's not a face anymore, so part of that could just be that she pulls some things out of her moveset and just keep it simple and just do a lot of heel things. And maybe that in itself will be enough for me to finally buy into her more. But I do think that the winner of this match is going to signal who wins the title match, because WWE is pretty anathema to having face-face or heel-heel matchups, especially for titles.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, one of the things that I'll be looking at in this match, and you mentioned watching this match closely, and I think this is a match that really intrigues me, mostly for the reasons you mentioned, is, you know, Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez sort of came into NXT at the same time. They are attached to the hip. You know, they were as tag team. They were as enemies now. And so I think a lot of people see them very similarly. And so I think this match, having them go against each other, is really going to, you know, this is where the rubber meets the road, so to speak. You know, is one of them going to stand out from an in-ring perspective above the other? And, you know, if it's like you say, Roxanne is on a higher level than Cora Jade, how exposed does that make Cora Jade in a match like this? Or can she keep up? Can she show that she is on the same level or close to Roxanne Perez from an in-ring point of view? So that's going to be something to watch here in this match. We've hit the bottom of the hour, so I want to sort of reset things and take our first phone call. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, being joined by PWTorch.com columnist, or contributor, rather, Bruce Hazelwood, who covers NXT for PWTorch.com. I gave you a promotion that I didn't check with Wade on there, Bruce, so I apologize for that.
yeah, well, I think Wade is going to be like, yeah, that's not happening.
This is Wrestling Night in America for August 14th, 2022, where we talk about the big shows in pro wrestling. If you want to join us and join the conversation, 515-605-9345, make sure to press 1 to show up in the queue to talk. Otherwise, you can email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. I want to go to the phones. Our first phone call this evening is Reverend Keith in Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Hello, gentlemen. How you doing?
We're doing well tonight. How are you?
Good. Just wanted to say I was so happy to see Hit Row make a return. And you can tell by the reaction from the crowd that the fans were just as excited to see them back. It's good that Triple H is trying to make amends with many of the characters in which Vince McMahon released. And I think the best is yet to come. I think also that Hit Row will be a good feud, mid-card feud for the Viking Raiders. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Hit Row returning, sans Swerve Strickland, obviously, on SmackDown Friday night. And that was a group that I was, you know, I thought, and I wrote in my column, you know, at the time they were called up, I thought that this would be a group that would struggle under Vince McMahon's vision because I don't think he would have gotten them. But it even shocked me at how little time they got on the main roster before they were released. So I'm hoping that maybe they'll have a little more input into their characters and be given a chance to get over, because I do think this team is something that SmackDown needs. So whether it's the Viking Raiders or whomever, I think that's – it goes back to what I said earlier, Bruce, about tag teams and Triple H perhaps reinvesting in tag teams or investing in tag teams. I mean, do you see that happening under Triple H? Does he really get behind tag teams? Maybe not at the level that AEW has, but do you see him giving more care and more, just in sheer numbers to tag teams than Vince McMahon did?
Triple H's booking history in NXT shows that he takes tag team wrestling much more seriously than Vince McMahon ever did. Some of the most memorable matches in NXT history have been tag team matches, which includes AOP, American Alpha, DIY, and The Revival at the time. So, Triple H and Shawn Michaels, who is currently the head booker of NXT, they both have had, I'd say that their professional careers were greatly enhanced by having tag team experience. And so I think they understand the importance. I was even under Vince McMahon led WWF and WWE. So I think Triple H is someone who sees the purpose of tag teams, understands that tag team wrestling has a place. People love tag team wrestling. If you go back to territory days, a lot of tag team wrestling, a lot of teams put together, a lot of great tag teams that really were the drawing cards more so than the main champions were. And so his history says he's going to put a lot more emphasis on the tag team division. Going back to what we were talking about, Cora Jade, too, I wonder if, he's bringing back a lot of these acts now, unfortunately for Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland, or maybe fortunately because they're doing well in AEW, maybe they wouldn't have been released, or maybe they would have been re-signed to WWE if Triple H had taken over sooner. Maybe Cora Jade wouldn't have turned as quickly as she did on Roxanne Perez if Triple H had been in charge, or at least macro in charge of creative at the time. So there are some things that I think we'll see some course corrections with, but I also think that regarding tag team wrestling, yes, Hit Row is great. I think their act, Triple H, understands not just what that act is, what the purpose can be, but the importance of having an act like that on television, on their program, and what it means to particularly black fans, and when you look at BFAB, to black women fans. And that is something that I think, much more so than Vince McMahon ever put thought into, Triple H will look at that and understands that, sure, they might be a little raw around the edges, but they have an it factor to them that not all tactics can bring with them. And not all acts in general can bring with them. So, yeah, I think bringing them back was a good call. They're going to do, I think, mid-card right now is perfect where you want them. I think the best thing to do is just have them do squash matches continually for a couple months and then make their way up the tag team card.
Yeah, I think their squash matches can be impressive, too. I mean, you've got the power and the athleticism combination, which really works well in the squash environment. So looking forward to seeing that. Reverend Keith, let's go back to you for your second question for us tonight.
Yes, and it was also good to see the Baltimore Flavor and the Maryland connection, as I tweeted on Twitter with A.J. Francis is from P.G. County to Hootie Miles, used to be a running back a number of years ago for the Maryland Terps. And it was ironic that in that in the ring, the third person you had was Ref Jess. Jessica Cobb began at Maryland Championship Wrestling, and Brandon Scott, he also wrestles currently for Maryland Championship Wrestling. So it had a Baltimore flavor to it there, re-debuted the other night. So that was good to see, and it was good to see B-Fab back with him. And I'm sure Swerve was happy over in AEW. So that was good. It was good to see that, and I expect some more returns coming, you know, shortly on the horizon, you know, from one Triple H. Getting back into the NXT Heatwave event, I think, Doc Bruce, that Roxanne Perez will probably go over, and I have a feeling as much as I would like to see Zoe win the title, I think that eventually the title is going to go to Roxanne. And as you said earlier, the winner of this match will be the new number one contender, whoever wins that women's title match between Mandy and Zoe. I just think it's too soon to put the strap on Zoe. She just came back. She looks great, but I have a feeling by her standing tall last week that was indicative of the booking that's yet to come, and that Mandy will retain, and hopefully Roxanne will get that title belt whenever they decide to bring Mandy and the Toxic Attraction up to the main roster. Now, do you see them promoting Mandy and Toxic Attraction up soon, or do you think that they'll stay down there a little longer?
I think, you know, the one thing I will say about Roxanne Perez is she is a great foil for Mandy Rose and Toxic Attraction. So if the direction coming out of Heatwave is Mandy Rose versus Roxanne Perez as the top women's feud, I think that's great, because you can't find two more different women in a lot of ways than Roxanne Perez and Mandy Rose, and I think they can do a lot of fun stuff with those two in building up that title match whenever that takes place. You know, Toxic Attraction, Bruce, is an act that I think, as an act itself, it has been main roster ready for a while. The question has always been, is their in-ring strong enough, talking really about all three of them, to really get over and to a level that matches the push they would get on the main roster, because I think that's kind of the deficit right now a little bit for some of the women in Toxic Attraction. So, you know, is that something that you see is good enough to make it on the main roster and not hold them back? Or do you see them needing a little more time, a little more ring time in NXT before they get called up to the main roster?
JC Jane definitely needs more work. I'm sorry to say, but she's plateaued in the ring, and it's been obvious. Unfortunately for Mandy Rose, it's probably accurate to say that Gigi Dolan is the best wrestler of the three right now. And if you're Mandy Rose, that's probably not a good thing, considering you came back to NXT to be the focal point of the women's championship, the women's division, and the women's champion. But there's someone in your group who's probably the better in-ring worker and arguably the better overall talent. So Roxanne Perez, Toxic Attraction, great foils, you're correct. The scenario that Reverend Keith laid out in terms of Mandy Rose going over and eventually being beating Zoe Stark and Roxanne Perez eventually being the one to dethrone her was exactly the scenario we thought would happen, until we saw the reaction to Zoe Stark's comeback, and specifically her comeback promo and the reaction to that promo. If I'm looking at that as Shawn Michaels as Triple H, I'm looking at it and saying the hottest act in the women's division right now is not Roxanne Perez, it's not Mandy Rose, it's Zoe Stark. That promo solidified any doubts I had, or not solidified, it erased any doubts I had regarding her ability to carry a championship angle and promo, with how passionate and how invigorated she was delivering that promo. So I'm also someone who I like face-to-face, heel-to-heel. I don't see any issues with that. It might be a little harder to tell the story, but if you're talented enough, you should be able to tell the story. If Zoe Stark wins, the thing that Zoe Stark has more than any other woman in the division, aside from the Lash Legends and Electra Lopez, is that she's a big, strong woman. Roxanne Perez is one of the smaller women in the division. So even if they go face-face, you can still work the big woman, small woman matchup and have Zoe Stark lean a little heel just by virtue of being bigger and stronger with Roxanne Perez trying to overcome that. If they have a match immediately, I would have Perez lose and then work her way back up to eventually beating, at that point, I would say, a heel Zoe Stark. I think there's and with Zoe Stark, because of the amount of heels, you talked about it, Greg, the amount of heels they have within the women's division, I think you need to have the babyface champion. And that babyface champion right now to me is Zoe Stark.
Let me ask you this before I go back to Reverend Keith here. Is Zoe Stark is going to be in the WWE Women's Tag Team Title Tournament along with Nikita Lyons. How does that, if at all, change the dynamic of her challenging for the title on Tuesday night?
So at first I thought it would change it a lot, but then Kelly Wells astutely pointed out that this is probably just angled to set up Zoe Stark's first championship feud and her first title challenge being against Nikita Lyons, most likely on a episode of NXT proper and not a premiere live event. So I think what they're doing here is they're going to something where they're a new tag team, so maybe there's miscommunication, and that miscommunication leads to a feud, and then maybe Zoe Stark wins the title. And then she's attacked afterwards by Nikita Lyons to end the show. And that is what sets up Nikita Lyons challenging Zoe Stark for the title probably the week after, or maybe in 2 weeks or whatever it might be. But I think I agree with Kelly more so now than I thought beforehand because of how he laid it out.
All right, Reverend Keith, your final question or comment for us tonight.
No, I agree totally with Dr. Bruce. I actually would love to see Zoe win the belt, but I'm just unsure in the way that they have built up Roxy. I have a feeling she's next in line. But getting back to Toxic Attraction, somebody told J.C. Jane she was 100, and she believes it, and she spends too much time dancing. If she was better in the ring, she would be okay. I've always liked Priscilla Kelly, and like you said, she's the best worker of the three. So we'll see how that call-up goes whenever the time comes. But I'm hoping in a way, Doc, that you are right, and I may be wrong, because I would rather see Zoe get the belt Wednesday night. And, you know, Roxanne Perez isn't going anywhere, so there's plenty of time to put the strap on her. So we'll see who's right. But either way, I think it'll be a good match, and I've followed Zoe's career from when she was on the Indies as Lacey Ryan. And she can definitely go in the ring, and she's had quality matches throughout her career. So I think this will be a good match on Wednesday night. Also, I heard you mentioning about the fact that they are using Carmelo Hayes in lieu of not showing Braun Breaker as often on TV, and I've noticed that too. So it's kind of funny. He is truly living up to his A champion moniker, and I guess that's the way it is across the board, because you know on the main roster, you know, Roman Reigns is absent half the time, and that if they're building up Lashley's U.S. title reign, they're building up Gunther's Intercontinental title reign. So that seems to be the play across the board on all three shows, is that you place your secondary champion in the forefront in lieu of your main champion either being absent or the storyline being less effective. Now, do you think that this will continue in NXT, that is, with Carmelo Hayes being the top dog, or do you think that there will be an incoming feud involving Braun Breaker to the point where they can, you know, place him back where he belongs on top?
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly, I think a Carmelo Hayes versus Braun Breaker feud happens sooner rather than later. I don't know if they try to get the North American title off of Carmelo Hayes. I guess if we see that on Tuesday night, maybe that will be an indication. But it seems pretty clear that Braun Breaker is the guy in NXT. But I think Carmelo Hayes is right up there. And so Hayes versus Breaker feud, and there are a lot of very easy ways to get there. You know, Hayes talking about himself as the A champion, obviously that could upset Bron Breakker and get him riled up a little bit. But, yeah, I think at some point soon, these two feel like, at least they're pushed as, the two alphas in NXT, Bruce. And it seems like sooner rather than later, they're going to have to come to blows in a significant feud.
Yeah, we've been pretty much pining for a champion versus champion match for all of 2022, basically. The three of us on PW2 Talk NXT between Breakker and Carmelo Hayes, because of their importance, their just charisma. Bron Breakker has his own unique charisma. What I said earlier isn't to detract anything from Bron Breakker. It's just my opinion on who I'd rather have. And so with Carmelo Hayes, with Bron Breakker, the issue here, so the match itself, you know, that's money. But ever since JD McDonagh debuted, I wrote, and I'm going to stick by it, what's the point of debuting him this strong if you're not going to put the title on him? Because if you don't put the title on him right away, then I think you're doing his character a huge disservice, and he's going to have to climb uphill way too much after what has been his build, his character presentation has been very polarizing to some. I think it's been a unique take and really hammers home the character of being very, I guess in a way he's sociopathically savant-like with his understanding of the human body and how he's trying to use that to torture and hurt people. But how they presented him makes me believe that if you don't put him over here, then what was the whole point of bringing him over anyway, unless you're just going to take him to Raw and SmackDown right away? He's ready for that. There's no doubt, you know, in-ring and character-wise, he can do that. So if that's their plan, fine. But, again, if you debut him so strong, you need to put the title on him. Think about it like it's a different scenario, but in a similar vein. Think of it like Kevin Owens and John Cena. You have to put over the person that you think – okay, how to do this. A person debuting that strong needs to be put over – in a similar fashion to how they were debuted. If they don't do it here, I think McDonagh in NXT is destined to just be mid to upper card, maybe challenge for a title, but not going to win the NXT main title. And I don't think that's what they have envisioned for him with his debut moving forward. So anything about Hayes and Breakker, I think there's a big roadblock there, and that I think JD McDonagh is going to become NXT main champion.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that's a fair point. You know, he debuted, like you said, with a lot of fanfare. And if he loses, where does he go? You know, we also have to keep in mind that there's the possibility and the potential that there's something screwy in the finish where, you know, we've seen this before where, yes, JD McDonagh loses, but someone costs him a match that moves him right into that feud so he doesn't lose a lot by losing, or... you know, he cheats to win, so Bron Breakker doesn't lose a lot. So there's a lot of different variations and ways to get around, you know, just a straight-up win or a straight-up loss. I think that's where I stand with the character. I don't really care much for the character. I don't really – it just doesn't really do much for me, I guess. I see what they're going for, and I get it. And so I don't know if it's not the right person for the character, or if the character just is not – clicking as a whole, but it's just it really isn't working for me. I am interested to see what a match, a long form major level match for a character like this looks like. You know, I wonder, because so much of the character is built around hurting people and twisting limbs and working the body in a way that seems unlike anyone else, is that going to translate to a match, or is he just going to wrestle a regular match? Like, because if it's just a regular match and he's not, you know, working on pressure points and trying these unique, you know, submission things, like, I feel like the character is pointless. So, to me, in this match, there's kind of a lot that this character has to live up to for me to buy in fully to it. So, that's kind of my take on the JD McDonagh character. But we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens on Tuesday night. That's the main event. Braun Breaker, JD McDonough for the NXT World Title. Reverend Keith, thanks so much for calling in. Glad to hear from you this week.
Yes, and we look forward to an exciting show, and we'll see how that McDonough Breaker match goes, because I just can't see them booking McDonough to beat this guy, you know. But we'll see. Anything can happen in the WWE. Have a good week.
Thanks. And even NXT, too. Anything can happen in NXT. So, yeah, I mean, what's your take on Breaker? I know you have Hayes a little above him, but do you begrudge WWE for putting their eggs into his basket as the top guy in NXT? Or do you think there's really something there with him that can make him a future major star on the main roster?
Do I begrudge it? No, I understand it. So he has the name. He has the look. He's not even as big as Karrion Kross, I think. But we see Karrion Kross is getting another push as the number two heel right behind Roman Reigns. So that's a big push. And for someone that size, Breaker with that pedigree, he has the amateur wrestling background. He has the football background. I understand why they put their eggs in that basket. When you have nepotism, does benefit the company, of course, whatever company you're in, and that name value goes a long way. So I don't begrudge them for doing what is, as they say, best for business. Now, my thing with Breaker is there just hasn't been enough improvement, specifically in the promo department. In the promo department, he relies too much on yelling, and it seems to me most if not every promo starts out at a 10 or at an 8 and then gets to a 10 pretty quickly, and there's just no room for that story, that promo, that character to build within that, and it just becomes a yell fest with him. It's sort of like Dolph Ziggler always yelling. To me, you need to have levels to your presentation, to your promos, and there aren't any levels to me. At least if there are, there are minimal levels to me when it comes to Braun Breaker on the mic. In the ring, he's definitely improved. He's found better timing. He's not as green as he used to be. He still definitely has some issues. He's not going to have the cleanest match with someone in there who isn't as experienced. Even though Joe Gacy is, the character and the style he has to wrestle as that character led to a pretty ho-hum match for their last NXT Men's Championship match. So yeah, I understand. They see the potential. It can happen. I think in the long run, though, Carmelo Hayes is still the safer bet and the more surefire bet to me to have everything it takes. Of course, he has the big thing working against him, which is racism. But aside from that, I think he's still the person that I would put my money on to have the more successful career, however you define success in professional wrestling.
I'll defend Breaker's promos a little bit here a couple of ways. First, and this is the caveat that they keep it short, I think if he's cutting short promos, the presentation and the delivery is fine. I think when you get to long-form promos, then yes, the constant yelling, the being at a 10 for 5 or 10 minutes or however long you need to carry that in-ring promo, that back and forth with someone, that would cause issues. We haven't seen him do a lot of those type of promos. Most of his promos have been kind of soundbite-ish. So I think, you know, when it's that way, I think it's okay, or at least more acceptable than if he's doing, you know, this 10-minute back and forth that we see on Raw and SmackDown a lot of times. The second part is, back in the day, and I'm dating myself here, of course, but everybody cut promos that way. If you go back and watch a Coliseum video of, you know, the Royal Rumble and how they would cut promos before the Rumble, everybody was at a 10. Everybody was yelling. It was probably all the cocaine, but still, everybody was, like, hyped up to the gills, and everybody cut promos that way. Nowadays,
sure,
that's
sure.
not the case.
But the thing
so
is...
So I think... Let me finish here. I think it helps him stand out a little, actually, to have this level of intensity that others have pulled way back on in an effort to be, whether it's more humanizing, whether it's more, you know, whatever the case may be, the Jake Roberts style that a lot of people have learned, which is, you know, for those characters, very effective. The fact that not everybody cuts a promo the same way Bron Breakker does, I think makes him stand out more and does make it a little more valuable.
So that kind of almost defeats the point that I was going to make, because I was going to say, well, what made the people in those times with the promos stand out would be the ones like Dusty Rhodes, like Jake Roberts, like Macho Man, where they have levels, where they built up to those points, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, his promo style isn't as common now amongst wrestlers as it had been in the past and currently. However, I do think that most – whatever promotion you're in, the champion generally has to give longer promos. And because we haven't really seen that from him, I wonder if he'll be able to do that effectively once he does reach Raw or SmackDown. That's one reason I'm so much higher on Carmelo Hayes, because he's shown over and over again when it comes to the long-form promo, whether it's the vignette in the barbershops, whether it's a long interview in the back, or whether it's holding court in center of the ring, he can do all that and feel comfortable doing that. So I think that's the only issue, I guess, when he comes – I guess that's my counter to your counter would be is – yeah, it's nice and short, but do we know if he has it in him to do a longer promo, a championship promo? And that's, I think, where we need to see his game go next for me to feel more comfortable about him being the definitive future of WWE.
Yeah, I'd agree on that too. Yeah, for sure. You mentioned Karrion Kross returning. Talked about Hit Row returning. Max Dupree has come back after being exiled by Vince McMahon. So, you know, Triple H not afraid to add to the main roster while he's been in charge. We talked already about Hit Row. Karrion Kross, I'm curious as to what you think here, because obviously there's a very big discrepancy between what Triple H saw in Karrion Kross and how Vince McMahon viewed him. Where would you fall more on the Karrion Kross scale? Is it how Vince saw him as kind of a mid-carder who lost a lot of mystique and couldn't carry his end of the in-ring part? Or do you really see him as a top-level heel the way Triple H apparently does?
Probably somewhere in between. I think Vince didn't do him any favors in terms of the presentation with the outfit that looked straight out of RPG, things like that. But I also wasn't his biggest fan when he had his big run in TNA or Impact either. And when he was in NXT, the big criticism against him, and it's something I've heard Wade repeat over and over again when it comes to discussing him, is that he just refused to bump for people. And maybe it's because of an injury, or maybe he thought his character just couldn't take bumps. But he's not a Braun Strowman. He's not an Undertaker or a Kane. He can't be someone who doesn't take bumps and have it be believable. It just doesn't work. Now, I think that in-ring, he's more talented than Vince gives him credit for. But I don't think that I think his ceiling isn't in-ring is probably average to above average at best. His character presentation needs to have Scarlett. Scarlett adds so much to it. Even in NXT, when he didn't enter with her, there was a distinct difference to how he seemed, how much more intimidating or how much less intimidating he seemed without her, I should say. And I think there's just an aura, a factor about Scarlett that really adds a certain presence to him that he doesn't have by himself. And I think because of that, that's why I don't see him as a top of the card heel, but I think he's definitely someone who a mid card heel, maybe sometimes mid upper card, is perfectly suitable for that. The pairing with Scarlett definitely can add to the upper card feel to it, but I think we're saying all this without having seen him back in the ring yet in WWE with this new presentation. Maybe with a new fire and a talking to or something that really hammered home that this is his chance to be successful. And if that's going to be the case, then he needs to work with people. And if that's the case, then I'll eat my words. Triple H was right. But if that's not the case, then it might be that Vince actually had a better idea of what his potential was, which is it's frustrating to say.
I think it's really unknown. Right now, you know, I think that potential is really unknown because there are so many factors that we need to see play out. And part of it is the in-ring. And, you know, when he was on top at NXT, it felt so odd because for so long, the main champions in NXT had been supremely accomplished in-ring stars. Maybe EC3 was the exception there for a short time. But for the most part, during Triple H's reign, it was guys who could put on four and a half star main event matches to end takeovers, right? Here comes Karrion Kross, and he's not that. So maybe that stood out more in that environment. Maybe that in-ring aspect won't stand out as much. You know, WWE's main roster is still very accomplished in the ring, and you need to have a certain level of in-ring talent. But maybe, you know, amidst the Johnny Garganos and all those guys, maybe that won't be as obvious on the main roster. Maybe that'll be better protected on the main roster. I don't know. You know, you have the kind of veterans like Drew McIntyre to work with. I think that will be valuable for him too. And you're right, the character, you know, if I had to choose between the NXT character and the main roster character, you know, 10 times out of 10, I'll choose the NXT character. I don't think it was perfect by any stretch, but it was certainly a lot better than whatever they gave him on the main roster, which I don't even know how to articulate what that character was, even. So I think, you know, having that character back and having maybe a situation where he can blend in a little more with the in-ring and not stand out with how out of place he is on the main roster, maybe that will help. There's still, like I said, a lot of unknowns with him on the main roster that we'll get answers to pretty quickly here in the coming weeks. But let's go back to the phones. Got another call here. This is from DJ from Miami, the 305 area code. DJ, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Hey, guys. Going into what you guys are just saying, my question is, now that he's bringing everybody back, okay, Kross and everybody, now, are they just bringing them back, or it's not like they already have storylines written for them, so it's just like, I hear from the rumors, it's like, Kross could win the belt from Reigns, but how about Bobby? Bobby's been working his ass off, and then all of a sudden, all these people are coming through and re-signing because Vince is gone, but do you feel like the new guys coming in deserve the belt, or do you feel like these guys who have been busting their butts for all this time deserve, you know, get the belt or something like that? You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, I don't know where all these guys are going to fit in. It's just like, yeah, I'm glad they're back, but, you know, hopefully storylines will grow, or you can't just, you know, fall, you know, stale and flat and then think they're going to run, you know?
I will say that if busting their butt was a prerequisite to getting a championship, there would be a lot more champions in WWE. Unfortunately, that's just not the way it works. I don't know that they're bringing Kross back to put the title on him, certainly not over Bobby Lashley. But I will say bringing these guys back, Bruce, certainly, even with the ones they brought back and even with the women that they brought back, certainly refreshes a roster that was desperately in need of being refreshed. You know, we have The Miz, who was in the same place on the roster that he was 15 years ago. Dolph Ziggler is still there. I mean, when you look back at, and I know we've done this exercise before, when you look back at WWE's roster in 1990 versus 1993, look at how different it is. Look at how different 1995 is versus 1998. But when you look at, like, 2010 versus 2022, there isn't a lot different, I don't feel like. So I think the roster did need – there's been a lot of wrestlers damaged by booking. The mid-card has been damaged tremendously, I think. So I think you do need to bring these guys in, whether they're being brought back or being brought up for the first time, like a Dakota Kai, that you need to refresh that roster and bring in new faces and have fans see new opportunities.
Yeah, and, you know, Karrion Kross aside, maybe Hit Row aside, the people he's bringing back, they add a lot of value to, whether in-ring or as characters, to the product. What, you know, Max Dupree, former LA Knight, former Eli Drake. I think Maximum Male Models was going to be done if it was left to Sophia Cromwell or Maxine Dupri. She definitely needed more time down at NXT. Bringing her up also ruined a storyline they had brewing with her and Von Wagner and Mr. Stone about some potential infighting there. But Triple H, I think, understands that the releases might have looked good on the budgets, the outlooks, the calls, whatever, because of how much money you're saving, etc. But he also understands that in order to have a product that seems fresh, you can't have the same matchups going on for six straight months. You can't have them going on for the same 2-3 months. You know, you need to have some a rotation of sorts in terms of who's doing what. And the thing is, you know, Io Sky and Dakota Kai especially, these are two women who in the ring are very, very good. Io Sky is one of the best Joshi wrestlers that has wrestled over the past decade. Genius of the Sky. She is just amazing. Her character is fantastic. Dakota Kai seems to have a new fire under her coming back. And, you know, they're going to do wonders, whether as a tag team or as singles. And they're really going either way with them right now, or both with those two. And I think that's a boon for Raw and SmackDown. Talk about Bobby Lashley. You know, your first question, your question about people who have been there and working hard. I could ask the same question about, are we talking about AEW? Because that seems to be the common refrain when it comes to people coming into AEW. Is, are you putting the AEW originals, quote unquote, at a disadvantage here, and you know, showing favoritism to those you're bringing in who are new and fresh, friends of those who have helped make AEW become what it has become thus far. And so I think these are issues that are indicative of pro wrestling as a whole, because there's always what's the phrase? There's always a want or a need for something new and different. And something new and different sometimes is a wrestler who you've seen in a different promotion, what you think is going to be better at another promotion and regarding AEW. And with NXT or with WWE in general, it's those who people think were booked horribly under the previous regime who may have a better chance under this regime. So I don't want to negate your question, because I think there's merit to it, but I also think that there's more layers to your question than you were kind of giving credit for when you asked it. So there's just a lot going on in terms of what this all means. And again, it's not like these changes are going to be rapid fire. I think we'll have a better idea at the end of the year of what Triple H's sort of macro view of how he wants to book. It's not just NXT anymore. It's 7 hours plus PLEs, how he wants to book those week in and week out, year in and year out, or month in and month out and year in and year out.
All right, DJ, back to you for your second question for us tonight.
Yeah, my second thing is, we were talking the other day about the new belt that EAW came out with, the three-way. Now I notice more people are becoming three-ways, you know, like all of a sudden, you know, Dax came out and helped Wardlow. I was like, oh, that would be great with those guys get the belt. Do you feel like these guys might, now that they're together, do you think that they have all the belt? Do you guys think that they're going to try for this belt too now that they're like a team now a little bit? Or do you think that they're definitely going to give the belt to the people, the other guys, the three-way belt?
I don't know that Wardlow and FTR are in the tournament. I'd have to double check the brackets, so I don't know if that's even the case. But I think it was more just a situation of timing, you know, FTR not really having anything going on right now, hard as that is to believe in AEW, and watching Wardlow's back. Look, I think if you're trying to get Wardlow over as a really popular babyface, there are very few baby faces on the AEW roster more popular right now than FTR. So giving him a little rub by having him interact with FTR, I think, is not a bad move. Whatever the case may be in terms of how it relates to the Trios Championship or the Trios Tournament, I just think that's probably smart booking. Bruce, your impressions of the Trios Championship in AEW, there's one thing you can say about AEW: there's no shortage of teams who could end up vying for this championship, as not needed as another championship probably is in that company.
you know, I think this is clearly set up to have the Elite versus the former Undisputed Era members as the blow-off to the title or as the main sort of trios feud coming out of the tournament. And for me, with any title being introduced into AEW, I just want some distinct, definitive guidelines and criteria because, like, the Mid-Atlantic Championship, it just seems like a title that is going to be defended around the world regardless of what its name might be. So I think at least here, and I talked about it with Wade a little bit, is they're at least having people talk about it, but Wade's argument was that they're still not making it seem like it's that important to a lot of acts. It's just another title there to win and not something that these – because they're just throwing a lot of trios together now. And I understand why that has to happen, but if you knew this was going to happen, I think there should have been more foresight into developing trios in the previous months leading into the introduction of the title so that in the minds of fans there were – and I mean off of Dark and Dark Elevation, you know, on Dynamite proper. And I think that would have helped in the minds of fans make it seem a little more – there have been a lot of fans pining for it. I'll say that much. But I think it would seem a little more enthusiastic if there had been a little more thought into the build in terms of getting the teams ready for the tournament.
All right, DJ, back to you for your final question tonight.
Okay, I'm going to go off the rails with this one, but I swear I'll reel it back in, okay? Here we go.
Whatever, man.
Virgil was on a podcast. He claims he hooked up with a million girls since he retired. Okay. Now, Ric Flair dropped on Twitter, I think it was like 10K to 100K. All these other wrestlers are dropping these numbers. Now, it's, you know, the new era. Like, I don't know. I hope these guys don't get in trouble because of that. Plus, Ric Flair. The whole point is, my point is, Ric Flair's commenting on this and throwing stuff out when he just not got in trouble again and came back to WWE. What the heck, bro? Like, this is crazy with Flair.
So what was the question? Do I believe that Virgil slept with so many women? Is that what you're asking me?
Flair threw out a number after Virgil was all that started hot fire Twitter, like how many girls did they hook up? So Flair, you know, Twitter, like, I think it was like 100K, you know, or whatever he wrote, and then all the other wrestlers started typing in what they were, you know. So my point was Flair just came to back to WWE, the woo. I just hope he doesn't get in trouble for this again. Like, I don't know what's going on with Flair.
Ric Flair can't help himself. I mean, that's the bottom line. The womanizing aspect of the Ric Flair character and person were a big part of who he was. And I think even at his age, even in this day and age where that is not something to brag about, you know, it's still ingrained in him that this is, you know, in some ways I think Ric Flair is still living it up in the 80s and in the 70s. And I think this is kind of an example of that. Bruce, if you'd care to comment on this.
My only comment is toxic masculinity is undefeated.
Okay, then. That's for sure. DJ, hope we answered your question or comment. Thank you for the phone call, and we'll talk to you again next week.
I thought that was nuts, you know, because he just came back with the woo, so I had to ask. Have a good day.
All right.
I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks. All right, sounds good. One more thing before we go, Bruce. I want to ask you, since we did talk about AEW there with DJ, CM Punk's return. CM Punk returned on Dynamite on Wednesday night. Hopping around the ring, he looked ready to go. Moxley did not seem impressed. Flipped him off. Went shoulder to shoulder with him on his way out. Is this how do you get to? I mean, I assume with the pay-per-view coming up in 3 weeks that it's going to be Moxley versus Punk there. And it sure seems like Moxley's going to be more of the heel. But, you know, how do you expect the tug-of-war of the crowd reaction to go leading up to it?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. When he was in WWE, the then Dean Ambrose wasn't necessarily my favorite. I was more apathetic to his character. I definitely saw, you know, his potential, his skill. It's just his presentation in WWE to me, I guess, left a bit to be desired. And in AEW, he's been, I think he's been more of a more refined, less sadistic version of his CZW past, which is still not, I mean, he's still doing a lot of the blood and the hardcore matches still. So it's not to say that, again, it's a little more refined. It's not as brutal as it had been in the past. But I also think that his promos, his presentation, and then his battle with sobriety, or his battle with addiction to becoming sober, I think that has helped this character really feel more authentic to people than it had in WWE. And I will say, you know, his first AEW world title run was probably hampered by the fact that it was during the pandemic without fans. And so it didn't seem as impactful. But I feel like as the interim champion, you couldn't have asked for someone to carry that belt any better than he has over the past month or so that he's had the belt. He's been out there week in and week out. He's been kind of the focal point of shows. He's been, you know, putting out promos. He's even been going around and doing matches at other promotions too. I mean, he just fought wrestled Effie last night, and if you didn't see it, Renee Paquette tweeted, "What the hell, Effie?" because Moxie put a big old, like, just was kissing Effie for a good 10 seconds in the match. And so that's an aside, I should say. But Moxie is just, I think right now, he's hitting all the right cylinders for him with this presentation. The issue now is, what do you do with it as AEW as Tony Khan? Because I think everyone understands that the initial path was to have Moxley and Punk as the unification bat, with Punk unifying the titles. But is Punk hotter right now than Moxley? And I talked earlier about Zoe Stark and Roxanne Perez. This might be one of those audible situations where maybe Mox is the one who actually wins and becomes, you know, to shut Chris Jericho up, the legitimate two-time AEW world champion with a third time with the interim title. That could be a possibility here, because he's just been received so well as interim champion week in and week out. And I don't think he's shown anything that makes me think that he shouldn't continue as champion. And I hate to say this, but looking at Punk, he hurt himself jumping into the crowd. He's probably more brittle than he used to be. Do you want your world champion to continue to have issues or the potential that they're going to be injured and be out for a long period of time? I don't know. So people come back and say, yeah, but what, you know, Moxie and Sabari, okay, sure. But I think right now Moxie's hotter than Punk, so it's going to be a real interesting decision for Tony Khan.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be really interesting to watch those crowd reactions too, and we'll get an idea of just who's hotter. Then we have Kenny Omega, by the way, who's going to be coming back and getting into the fray at some point too. That's just another iron to add to the fire. Well, Bruce, always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for your insight to NXT. We'll check that out Tuesday. We'll talk about the results next week here on Wrestling Night in America. The week after that, we'll do a preview of All Out, and then the week after that, we'll go on the air. After All Out goes off the air, taking your phone calls about that show. Before we let you go, Bruce, go ahead and plug what you do for The Torch and where fans can find you on social media.
Sure. So I cover NXT every other Tuesday night. Kelly Wells and I do a rotation on the live report, so you get a different perspective every other week in terms of how we receive NXT. And while we do have a lot of similar thoughts, we also have different opinions. And then about 20 minutes after NXT goes off the air, you can call this line, Wrestling Night in America, and we do PWT Talks NXT and discuss the show that just aired. So on Tuesday, we'll be discussing Heatwave right after the show goes off the air, basically. You can join us then, and you can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253.
Awesome. Dr. Bruce Hazelwood, thank you for joining me here tonight on Wrestling Night in America.
Thank you.
And thank everybody else for joining me as well. Always love hearing from you guys. You can email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. And join us again next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, on pwtorchdailycast.com. Because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.